Welcome back. Talking this hour with Dr. Henry Nyman, one of the world's foremost virologists. Henry has a PhD and internationally renowned and respected for his prowess in the field. We've been doing this for 2.5 months now, I guess, with Henry, the third hour each night, Monday through Friday. It's our Friday night wrap-up. I'm going to play a little clip here, but let me say hello to Henry first. Henry, welcome back. We called it last night, and boy, did he pulled another one today. Wow.
Well, last night, you know, basically got him into big trouble, and he took no questions today, and I think he's done. Rumor has it that got cut way back on White House briefings starting next week. He's not going to be doing daily ones, and I don't know how many scientists he's going to have at these briefings. And if he doesn't have any scientists, I don't think anybody's going to be watching them. They're going to just kind of...
Well, it's sad. We've lost a great
entertainment.
We've lost a great entertainment comedy show. It's correct, if nothing else. And there is nothing else, believe me. Here, let me just play this, and you'll hear Anderson Cooper's comment. And I must say, I'm not an Anderson Cooper or CNN fan, but Cooper tells it straight, and he didn't become gratuitous about it. He just told it straight. Here's Trump's really morbid performance today, trying to back out of what he did last night.
Now, I was asking a question sarcastically to reporters like you just to see what would happen. Now, disinfectant for doing this maybe on the hands would work. And I was asking the question of the gentleman who was there yesterday, Bill, because when they say that something will last 3 or 4 hours or 6 hours, but if the sun is out or if they use disinfectant, it goes away in less than a minute. Did you hear about this yesterday? But I was asking a sarcastic and a very sarcastic question to the reporters in the room about disinfectant on the inside. But it does kill it, and it would kill it on the hands, and that would make things much better. That was done in the form of a sarcastic question to the reporters.
That's the fourth time he's used the word sarcastic. What does Shakespeare say about that? Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's actually used sarcastic in his other excuses, you know, that he kind of
doubled into in prior. Right. It's a chestnut he pulls out. Here, let's finish this up here.
No. To look into whether or not sun and disinfectant on the hands, but whether or not sun can help us because... I mean, he came in yesterday and he said they've done a big study. This is a study. This isn't where he hasn't done it. This is where they've come in with a final report that sun has a massive impact negatively on this fiber. In other words, it does not live well with humidity and it doesn't live well with sunlight, heat. It doesn't live well with heat and sun and disinfectant. And that's what I brought out. And I thought it was clear. Okay, anything else?
What you just heard is the President of the United States just lying right there. It's fascinating because he's lying about something that we all witnessed just yesterday of him talking to his own coronavirus task force about doing research into injecting bleach disinfectants into people, somehow cleaning them from the inside because disinfectant works on tabletops and things like that.
All right, that's enough. For all of you who missed it, there it is. Henry, go ahead.
I mean, most heard it live yesterday, and if they didn't hear it live, they probably saw a tape of it today of what happened yesterday, and it's definitely not sarcastic. He definitely went on, and the parent company of Lysol had to issue a statement, and... I think in Maryland, poison control, they were getting calls asking, you know, whether it could be used or couldn't be used or something.
Wow.
And
wow.
I thought it might have even been, you know, hundreds of calls, but I don't know the exact number, but it was not one or two calls. And, you know, it was discussed at length, a lot of locations today. And then on top of that, his favorite drug was warning was put out by the FDA.
Oh yeah, saying, big time
saying
today.
That it should only be used in clinical trials, you know, in a hospital setting, that, you know, people should not be using it on their own at home or kind of improvise how they wanted to use it, et cetera. And they warned that it, you know, it did have, you know, side effects. It affects, heart rhythms and, you know, it's definitely, not for widespread use. And then the, and then I think another publication came out, on, Vanity Fair, I think, or New Yorker, something regarding, the pressure that was put on the guy from BARDA as far as, trying to, make the drug available to anybody that wanted to ask, and yeah. You know, there were regulations that it could only be used in clinical trials, and they were going to just go around that regulation and just make it available, and there was a big rollout. They're going to push it into New York and New Jersey, and I mean, it was not a good day at all, and I mean, yesterday was bad, and today the fallout from it was not good, and associated ones weren't. And so he literally took zero questions today. It was a shorter press conference. They kind of ticked off, you know, the advantages and the states that were supposed to have lower levels. They didn't really define what the lower levels was, and they didn't name the states, and I don't know. I've been tracking all 50 of the states, and generally they're all kind of plateaued, and if anything, they're creeping up a little bit. And the number of new infections was over 30,000 yesterday, and almost 35,000 today. So I don't know where all these declines are supposed to be. You know, like I said yesterday, it's not going up exponentially like it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, but it's not having any dramatic declines. And to get to stage one, as far as starting to lift the regulations, is supposed to be going down for 14 days with reasonably, you know, aggressive testing. And so we'll see what happens in Georgia. Georgia went ahead with their relaxing and telling
it began today.
You know, massage right. Parlors and
tattoo parlors.
Barbershops. Yeah. Right. They could open up today. And some did, some didn't. Apparently the barbershops had a lot of business, but they had a long wait because they did reduce the density, so they weren't, you know, having as many people in at any one time and nobody waiting. Right. So they did make some adjustments, but you know, it's not at all clear that there's going to be a whole lot of business, and Georgia has some serious issues as far as some of the locations where there's, you know, concentrations of cases have been problems in the past. And Georgia has quite a few prisons that actually have confirmed cases. It looked like I saw a map, and it looked like there were at least 20 different prisons throughout the state, which had, you know, at least some inmates that were positive for the virus. And they were high in meatpacking, meat and poultry and pork processing plants in Georgia. And some of which had, not only they had cases, they had deaths at least one of the poultry plants. And so they've got those types of concentrations there. And then, you know, the nursing homes, they have another set of concentration. So they may have, I don't know what the argument is. I mean, the governor said something to the effect that, you know, though a science guide or something, it's hard to see where any of the science is. It certainly doesn't show that cases have been decreasing in the last 14 days. They look pretty flat going across. You know, each day it bounces a little bit, but there's no trend. It's going down. It goes down one day and up the next day, and it's pretty steady if you take any types of moving averages there. But that was, you know, it really isn't clear how these restrictions are going to get lifted in any significant way regarding at least some of the larger metropolitan areas. And
the other side of that coin is if they do restrict just to some business and they open up, fine. We'll find out. I don't think there are going to be very many people going into a lot of these businesses for quite some time. They've been traumatized with fear. They're afraid.
Right.
They don't want to go sit in a restaurant. No.
No. I mean, that's the thing. They're, you know, at best, they would do it after it's been open and they see that there isn't much of an effect. But to see the effect, with the limited amount of testing, you're not going to see it until people start showing up in hospitals. And by then, it's, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, probably closer to 3 or 4 weeks down the road before you get quantity high enough that you can notice it. And by then, right, it's off to the races because you have all these other people that are infected that haven't been tested and haven't developed symptoms yet. So it's going to be very tricky to see how to get things rolling again from almost every aspect of it, for meeting criteria to ease things up and then knowing that you're not just creating these massive problems that are going to essentially hold the viral levels relatively high until the numbers start to go up in the fall and the days start to get shorter again. And all of a sudden you're in an issue of whether schools are going to open up again, whether sports are going to get started again. And it's just going to be very, very messy, I would say. And we'll see, you know, what happens in Georgia. But
Henry, with the alleged 80% really not showing symptoms, half of those have no symptoms allegedly. Does this mean that if they did open it up, what they're kind of hoping is that we'll kind of just get along with it, like a flu season? Some people get sick, some people won't. But they'll somehow crawl back to a semblance of normalcy. Is that the hope?
I don't know. I don't know what it's based on. I imagine some people think that might be the scenario. But the problem is the asymptomatic, I think, is just creating a lot of confusion, because the asymptomatic, if you test, you find the asymptomatic. The ones that are asymptomatic because they have a low viral load are, you know, they're going to do fine. They're not going to go in the hospital. They're not going to get sick. They're not going to die. But they may not infect that many people either. They'll have a low viral load, and it's possible for them to infect other people. And if you're looking in testing contacts, you can find them. But you might not normally find them. That if you weren't looking, they aren't going to necessarily develop symptoms or seek any medical attention, and they were just kind of fade into the woodwork. And then you'd have another set that would have a more flu-like symptoms, but not so bad that they have to go to the doctor unless they're really concerned about it. Right. But normally they wouldn't go to the doctor and they wouldn't be identified. And the ones that would show up, you know, on the radar screen would be the more severe cases. And And those are the ones that you know, most people are worried about. They're worried that they will end up in the hospital and that it's real hard to predict whether they're going to end up in the ICU and whether they're going to, you know, how well they're going to do. And if they're younger, they're still going to have serious damage, and how long-term that damage is kind of unclear. And if they're older, they may not ever get out of the hospital. So it's really not clear. You know, you can make the argument that because of the asymptomatic and because of the mild cases, there'll be a lot of people that are positive. And if you test a lot of people, you know, asymptomatic and mild cases, that you'll find a lot of positives. But that's not going to be the part of the population that's getting all the attention right now. I mean, the attention now and the attention a month ago were really the ones that were showing up in the hospital and the ones that were going into the ICU and the ones that were dying, or the ones that had, you know, clotting disorders and ended up with heart attacks or strokes and died and never even got to the hospital. And had, you know, excessive deaths, if you kind of look at how many people died over a given period of time. And apparently it's significant enough that you can just plot the deaths. You can take mm-hmm. a given mm-hmm. location and plot how many deaths were reported on a daily or weekly basis. And you can see these peaks that just jump up over the baseline, and they're real clear, and they don't necessarily last forever, but they definitely are well above the historic baseline, and that those are examples of people that that basically died, and they were not tested. In many cases, they didn't even get in the hospital. They basically mm-hmm. were identified through 911 calls, and they were dead when they got there or died before they got to the hospital. So it's not at all clear that it's going to be anything like the flu. And these flu comparisons are really based upon, you know, kind of taking a very, very biased look at the data, because, you know, I've said this before, but it's worth repeating, that for SARS, all they were really looking at when they were looking at case fatality rate mm-hmm. were the pneumonia cases. And, you know, if you compare the pneumonia cases with SARS and you've got 10-15% of those with pneumonia end up dying, and you compare that to flu, you don't have 10-15% of flu cases in the hospital that end up dying. You do get some that die, but it's not 10-15% of the cases. And so that's kind of an apples to apples comparison. You're looking at people with the flu virus that develop pneumonia and go in the hospital, and the ones with SARS-CoV-2 that develop COVID and go in the hospital. And there's a huge difference in the case fatality rate. It's much more dangerous. And people are taking these antibody tests and saying, well, you know, in New York, if you really had 10-15% of the population and you had 1 million people that got infected, and then the denominator is a lot bigger and the case fatality rate a lot smaller, and it's comparable to flu, or it's even less than flu. I've seen some people posting it's less than flu. But that's not an apples to apples comparison. When they talk about how many people got the flu, that's based on how many people go into see a doctor and go to a flu clinic, and they get tested and they're positive for the flu. And so they take those people, and even if they aren't all hospitalized, they're doing surveillance, they're all symptomatic. they have no idea what the frequency of asymptomatic flu cases are. And they can't really test them with an antibody test because everybody's had the flu. They've already got antibodies. So you can't say that the antibodies they got were from the current season. So they have no idea how many people get the flu and are asymptomatic, or how many people get the flu and they don't see a doctor because they got the flu. You know, they know they got the flu and they stay home. And they don't go to a clinic, and they don't get tested. So they're only so when they're talking about how many people get the flu, and then of those, how many get die, they're really looking more at the more serious cases, and it's still a relatively low number. I mean, it's a high number of people because so many people do get the flu, but it's not a high case fatality rate because they're looking at people that see the doctor, and the vast majority of them don't go in the hospital, or if they do go in the hospital, they recover in the hospital. So if you go and you ignore the large number of people that actually die from COVID that aren't tested, and they, put on the death certificate that they had a heart attack or a stroke, and really the only reason they had the heart attack or stroke was because they were infected with the virus, and the virus caused these abnormal clots that ended up causing these fatal heart or stroke conditions. So it's it's not the same as flu. that's what the argument is. And it's a false argument. It's basically ignoring the deaths that don't get tested. And it's ignoring people who get the flu, but either A, don't have symptoms, or B, don't see the doctor. And then there's even more. Another study that just came out indicated that those that are infected with SARS-CoV and are symptomatic, 70% of them don't have a fever. So people that kind of have something, but they don't have a fever, if they're not tested, they're not even considered suspect cases because they don't have a fever. And I mean, that's the same thing that happened with swine flu. With swine flu, 50% of those that were PCR confirmed to have this swine flu virus didn't have a fever. And that's part of the issue of why it spread through schools is students that went to see the nurse took a look at the characterization sheet put out by the CDC, and it said, number one, the first symptoms is a fever at 100.4 or higher. And so if you came in there with a fever at 99.9, they said, well, you don't have swine flu because your fever is not high enough. Or if you didn't have any fever at all, they said, I don't know, you got an allergy, or you got bronchitis, or you got X, Y, or Z, but you don't have swine flu because you don't have a temperature of 100.4. And so, half to three quarters of the people with swine flu didn't meet that first requirement. They either didn't have any fever, or their fever was less than 100.4. So it's the same thing with this. This is a new virus. And it can cause infection, and it can be lower viral loads. And as a result, you don't really develop a fever, and you do have symptoms. And, it could be that when you're initially tested, you're not that contagious, but then you do become contagious shortly thereafter. But it's got all of these properties that make it very hard to control. One of the properties is that the viral shedding does start to go up before you develop symptoms. But So eventually, you're positive in the sense that you're symptomatic, but you were spreading the virus before you had the symptoms. So you were doing what you normally do, you know, and if it's, you know, going to school or going to work, you're basically spreading the virus and infecting people when you don't know it. And then you might know it after the fact, because you might develop flu-like symptoms and know that, well, you know, you still don't know that you were shedding it. You just know that you've got something. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't get serious, it just goes away. You know, maybe you'll stay home, and maybe you'll just go to work and just figure that you've got,
something.
You'll see if it goes away.
Are we at a situation now where, and I've read this fairly often, that we might as well just open up and let the chips fall where they may, or we're going to lose our whole country, our whole financial, economic, cultural, social. We're going to lose it all. That's what people are beginning to say now. So
yeah,
let's everyone get sick and see what happens. Yeah, that's what they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that's what they're saying. That's what they tried in Great Britain, and that's how Boris Johnson got infected, because it was starting to get away from them. So the issue is that what we had in the spring is just a walk in the park. That's not serious. Number one, the virus got cut off so that, you know, there may end up being 100,000 cases. There's 50,000 cases. Now it'll go up to 60,000 next week. So the number of cases with the social distancing is going to produce higher numbers than the revised prediction. The revised prediction was there's going to be 60,000 cases. There's going to be 60,000 cases next week. So there's definitely going to be more than 60,000, you know, unless it dramatically takes a nosedive, and so far it hasn't given any indication it's going to do that. That is not at its peak, and it's not going up exponentially, but it's maintaining. And the point is that if you don't do anything, that you will get 1 to 2 million infected. And actually in the fall, it could be significantly higher than that. You could be getting 10 million people infected with not asymptomatic infections, infections that require hospitalization. And then you're going to run into the situation that you're trying to avoid, which is overrunning the hospitals and having people die because they don't have the ability to treat them. And you'll have, you know, mass casualties, and it won't just be in the United States. It'll be worldwide, and you're gonna, you know, destroy your delivery systems to the for healthcare workers, because they're going to get infected too. That if you end up with that type of numbers where you've got 10 million people that need hospitalization,
sure,
you know,
sure,
they're not all going to get hospitalization, but they're going to be full. And the hospitals are going to be full, and they're going to be overrun, and the healthcare workers are going to be overworked, and it's still not clear whether the PPE issue has been solved, so whether they're even going to have the equipment to have a prolonged outbreak is far from clear. And so, you know, just waving your hand and say, let it rip and see what happens, things that can happen are pretty serious. And the virus can end up, number one, people aren't going to, if this starts to happen, you can do what you want. You can say, okay, there's no restrictions, go to work. And they're going to say, I'm not going to work. People are dying at work, and people are getting infected at work. I'm not going to go and see what happens and say, well, I'll go to the hospital if I, survive, then I'll have antibodies. I'll be immune, and I'll be in good shape. And if I don't, well, you know, I'll go there and go with a 10, 15, 20% case fatality rate and take my chances. And I don't know. I think a lot of people aren't going to want to take their chances with those types of odds. And so,
well, yeah, especially with the fear and everything else that's running rampant. Yeah, I agree.
Right.
But let's watch. Georgia's going to be interesting, I guess. If they have, now this is not flu, it's not flu, but if the numbers end up being similar in flu and in corona in Georgia, that'll be interesting. We'll have to track that as best we can. But without testing, how the hell are we going to know? And without a lot of people going for medical treatment, we won't know.
Yeah, well, I think you will end up knowing, but you're going to not know on a delayed basis. I think you will end up having people in the hospital. You will end up having deaths. You will be able to see the effect. But you'll see probably a somewhat muted effect because there probably will be some seasonal effect. I mean, the virus does much better when it's dry and cool and there's not as much sunlight. I mean, that's not from the study that was presented yesterday. Those are well-known facts of viruses and those characteristics have been known for decades. It's not a new revelation, and there's no reason to think this virus would be any different than other viruses that behave exactly the same way. And this study, if you want to call it that, just confirmed what's already known. I mean, that it was a dog bites man story. There wasn't anything new or unexpected other than, you know, Trump was surprised and wanted to figure out that this new finding
should
have some type of application.
So let's take a quick look back at the week. We broke through 50,000 dead.
Right.
We're headed toward 3,000 a day, right? Yesterday was 3,000 dead, I think, something like that.
The deaths are around 2,000. The cases are around 30,000. So we're at 900,000 cases now. We'll get up to 1 million next week, probably towards the beginning of the week. You know, probably Tuesday or Wednesday. Unless dramatically declines in the next few days, we'll be up to 1 million confirmed cases. And then, as far as the deaths are concerned, they're more in the neighborhood of 2,000 a day, and you know, there's different numbers out there, but the number is about 91.5 now. I'm sorry, 51.5. So there's about 8,500 to go to get to 60,000. So that's going to take, you know, maybe four or five days because the weekend's coming up. So probably in the middle of the week, certainly this month, it's going to get to the 60,000 mark. And, you know, unless it dramatically changes in the next week, you know, if it, this time next week is kind of similar to what it is today, then we'll be heading towards 70,000. And, you know, this prediction that through the summer it's going to go up to 60,000 is going to be an underestimate. And it's going to be getting closer to the original estimate, which was if there was social distancing and it was strictly adhered to, that you're going to have 100,000 to 200,000 deaths. And if, on the other hand, there's no social distancing, you're going to have 1 to 2 or 2.5 million deaths just in the U.S. And so, the social distancing, you know, has kind of reduced that now. So that's not projected for this initial phase. I mean, these projections were only through the summer, I believe. I don't think they really went into the fall. And then there were others that were saying, well, you know, you're going to end up with 40-50% of the population infected, but they weren't limiting it to the summer. They were essentially saying you're going to have one wave now in the spring, and it's going to kind of fade over the summer, and then you're going to come back with another round in the fall. And then when you add together what you had in the spring and what you have in the fall going into winter, then you put those two together and you're going to have, you know, some were saying 40%, some were saying 50%, some were saying 60% of the population infected. And if you have that many people infected and it goes worldwide, you're going to have billions of people infected. And you're going to have millions or tens of millions of deaths. And you're going to have scenarios that aren't that different than 1918. So it's not like, let it go, we'll see what happens. It's going to be like a bad flu season, and there might be 70, 80,000 people die in the U.S. and, you know, a few million worldwide. You're going to have numbers that are 10 times that amount, or maybe 20, 30 times that amount. And then it's still going to affect the economy, because you have that many people dying. People aren't going to be shopping. They're not going to go to movie theaters.
It could take a hell of a long time for people to get the confidence back, to do what they were doing before. I don't know how they're going to pull this off. I don't know.
Well, one of the plans is to try to minimize the deaths and not get the virus to take off. And basically get the virus under control with an effective vaccine that basically gives people immunity. And therefore, it would be more like a flu season, that you wouldn't necessarily eliminate the virus, and you wouldn't necessarily eliminate the need for further vaccinations, because the virus will probably evolve away from it. But you'll get it down to a more manageable level, so that, I mean, people go about their business with the flu. They're willing to tolerate that type of fatality rate, because most people that get the flu don't die, and most people that get the flu don't end up in the hospital, and if they do get in the hospital, they get out of the hospital. So that type of level is something that doesn't prevent people from going about their business, and they kind of know what to expect from the flu season. You know, they're more likely that they're going to get the flu in the flu season, and they're more likely they'll be achy, but they aren't going to end up hospitalized or dead. And so if this virus moves into that category where there's enough immunity in the general population, I mean, there's two ways to get that level of immunity. One is more of a controlled way with a vaccine, and the other is just let the virus run wild. And in either case, there's a possibility that the herd immunity will just push the virus to evolve, and there'll be a new version of it that'll be, you know, pretty rough, and it will have evaded that, and people that got infected in the first year would be susceptible to get infected in a subsequent year. And
could be.
I mean, these types of viruses evolve pretty dramatically.
We've got over 30 strains of this particular virus. Now, coming up this fall, let's look ahead. Are we going to see the Italian strain, or might we very well see something even worse, more virulent? It might be an Italian 2.0. It could be something worse. It's apparently a volatile virus.
Yeah, part of it has to do with how much immunity there ends up being. Right now, if the level of immunity is like New York, that's probably not enough to cause a dramatic change in the virus. You probably need to get it closer to 50 to 60% of the population has been affected. Then if you got that many people that have immunity, then that starts to put selection pressure on a mutation that evades that immunity. So then if you sure. have a virus that can affect those 60% that have already had it, plus the 40% that haven't, you've got the whole population, that's the type of situation that you'll get a new version and it's going to spread. If it stays down around 5% or so, which is where it is for most of the areas that have had outbreaks but are not in the New York and maybe New Jersey area, that it's in the 5 to 10%. Well, you still got 90% of the population.
Sure.
Is a target, and then something like the Italian strain can kind of, you know, do its thing in the fall, and it could be worse just in and of itself because it will already be established at the beginning of the season. Not
it won't have to horn its way
established
in
February, right? And it'll be there in August, September, October, and you know each day it's going to get shorter, so there's going to be less sunlight. More people will be inside in general, and it'll be cooler and drier. So for the northern hemisphere, anyway, that's more conducive for the virus spreading. And so if it starts at a high level and is widespread instead of, you know, what happened this year, where it looks like it kind of evolved into this Italian strain, and then the Italian strain started to spread. I mean, Cuomo did a press conference today. I mean, he always does his press conference, but today he said that he acknowledged that the virus that was in New York was from Europe and probably from Italy. You know, he came out and said that, and he said that it probably came in February, and that's when it started taking off. And he kind of hinted, you know, that it was because we were looking the wrong place. He came out and said that, you know, we were basically looking out the front door and the virus came in the back door. And, you know, so essentially we were looking at China and it came from Italy. And then he didn't really go into more detail. It's not only did it come, but nobody was looking at it because they weren't testing anybody from
That's
Europe.
Right.
They were only testing people from China.
They're walking
and
right
so
in.
There was no contact tracing. There was nothing. And so you had the virus, you know, in February was during flu season. People that had symptoms, they just figured they were the flu.
That's very important. It was a simultaneous track, flu and coronavirus in flu, the end of flu season. Go ahead.
Right. And I just got information from family members today where these were a couple of my wife's nephews who one was going to school in New York, the other had gone to school in New York and was living in New York and working in New York. And they were both in New York this season. Her cousin ended up bringing him back to New Jersey just recently, and they were worried because they had contacts in New York that had been positive, and so she kind of quarantined him in the house, and you know, they were upstairs and the rest of the family was downstairs, and
right.
they kind of did this for 10 days. And I said, well, congratulations. It looked like your quarantine worked. And, you know, they came back to New Jersey and you went 10 days and they didn't show any symptoms. So apparently they didn't get infected before they came home. And she said, well, you know, I think maybe they were infected back in February. They kind of had symptoms for about 4 days and they both had symptoms, but they kind of thought it was a flu or something, and they recovered. And now that she's thinking about it, and now that they were exposed now but didn't develop symptoms, I think she's probably right. They probably got infected because they were in New York. They were going to school, and they got infected and got over it and weren't thinking of COVID back in February. You know, and all the cases were out in California and they were all coming from China and they were in New York. And I suspect that if they did antibody tests, they'd find out they're both antibody positive, even though they didn't show any symptoms when they came home. But I think that happened a lot.
I would say you're right. Sure.
So I think that's how they got up to 30%. It wasn't, 20%. It wasn't that they necessarily had 20% of the population, you know, happened in the last month. It's 20% of the population got infected over the past 3 months or so, including a lot of those that thought they had the flu and had no idea that they had the virus because they didn't go to China. nobody they knew got tested and had it because nobody got tested. You know, so they didn't know that it was circulating in New York when they developed their symptoms, and they just figured they had flu. So in any event, the virus did kind of, you know, spread unchecked initially, but you know, when a first jump species like this, it isn't necessarily optimized, and you may get a lot of people that get infected with kind of a milder version. The viral load's not that high. If they get the virus and they don't get too much of the virus, then they have milder symptoms and they might be sick for 3 or 4 days and have enough immunity that, you know, a couple months later, if they get exposed to the virus, they don't, develop a second round.
Sure, but, I get it.
But they may be susceptible for the fall if there's a lot of virus that comes in. They'll have enough immunity that they might not get as sick as they would have had they got a lot of virus the first time. But and that's kind of how it evolves. I mean, that's exactly what happened with the swine flu. There was some swine flu in the spring. And then it kind of declined over the summer, but it was still around in summer camps, et cetera. And then when school started, it started taking off. But even when school started, a lot of people, they just had a cough. You know, they didn't really have much of a fever. They had whatever's going around, I've got, because everybody was coughing, but they didn't feel that sick. And then 6 weeks later, all of a sudden, they got kind of a higher dose, and then everybody got it, well, 50% anyway, ended up with a fever.
Those are reinfections.
Right. And it's just a higher level, and they didn't realize it's reinfections because nobody got tested on the first round. They just weren't that sick.
There still aren't enough tests right now.
Right. And that's what the problem is right now. And that's why, you know, the relaxation is difficult, because if you're going to do the relaxation, you want to have a lot of testing so that if you have so you'll know who's infected and who isn't. People that are supposed to be going back to work would like to know that, you know, their coworkers have been tested and they're negative. They don't want to necessarily go to work if they find out that X percentage have the virus and it's just a matter of time before everybody in the office has got it. And then there'll be reluctance to do this. And it's the same thing with going out and about. You go to a restaurant or go to a movie or, you know, whatever. They're not going to want to do that. And so a lot of these businesses that even if, you know, they get the okay to open up, aren't really, they don't have the okay to make money because everybody's staying home.
Right. Well, Texas mayor was caught defying her own stay home orders at a local nail salon yesterday. Yeah. That was kind of fun. California lawmakers are trying to find out more about Governor Newsom's $1 billion face mask deal with China. Southern California nurses who were suspended for refusing to work without N95 masks have been reinstated. So there's some interesting little texture here and there.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories. I mean, it's kind of a volatile time period, and there's a lot of things that people aren't used to, and X, Y, and Z are happening, and they make the news.
It's a deluge. Trying to go through this amount of stories every day and collate it, pull the good ones out of the reasonable ones, and it's really a challenge, I'll tell you. And I know you work all day and all night into this stuff, too. Henry, thank you again for another week. Talk to you over the weekend, no doubt, at some point, and Monday on the air.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks much.
Take care.
All right, yeah,
okay,
you too.
Care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Henry Nyman, exclusively here as we continue our nightly reports for you, and it looks like we may be doing this for longer than most anybody originally thought. We'll do it. Have a good weekend. Take care.